Case number 13-3047, the United States of America versus Michael Matthews, also known as Michael Gary Matthews, appellant. Ms. Wicks for the appellant, Mr. Thomas for the appellee.
Ms. Wicks.
Good morning, Your Honor. The case before the court is basically the facts of an unproven informant's undetailed reports of drug sales in a home where there's basically little, if any, information about when this information that the informant has was obtained. He knew Mr. Matthews for well over 3 years, but there's literally, the affidavit is devoid of specific information to give the magistrate judge information as to when these circumstances occurred. And the only thing that the police do to corroborate the information is to determine that Mr. Matthews does indeed live at that address. And I believe under all of the cases cited in our briefs that that's simply not sufficient, and the police officer should have been on notice that given the lack of information about the informant's veracity, reliability, and basically very little information about the basis of his knowledge, that this case does not meet the Leon exception, and the evidence seized pursuant to the search warrant should have been suppressed.
I have a question about your first statement that there's no indication of the time. As I'm reading the affidavit, it says that MM has been selling. That would seem to be a pleasant progressive tense, as if has been selling that he's selling currently.
Because it doesn't specify that there's any currency, any current knowledge of that. I think that expression is a very general statement.
It is, but isn't it a present progressive tense that would, if I remember correctly from my high school grammar, which is probably wrong, but it denotes a present ongoing
action. Well, I think the problem with that is the fact that there's no detail to that is what I'm taking issue with. You could assume that, but in this contest, you can't assume that because there's absolutely no detail. We don't know how many times he saw him there. We don't know what the context was. We don't know, did he have 10 encounters with him over 3 years ago and, you know, one 9 months ago and nothing since then? And I think the other thing I can point to in the affidavit that gives
sales method down to support itself and runs this illegal business from home, all those are present tense. Now, it may be that we don't have enough information on when he got the information, but the whole affidavit speaks in terms of a present ongoing drug business.
Yes, and I think that's the manner that the officer wrote it in, but I don't think that can assure the court that it's current knowledge, particularly because while the police officer indicates that there's other people talking about the informant, say, oh, well, he knows a lot, I would point to the cases that talk about that basically casual gossip within the criminal world is not sufficient. There has to be something beyond that. And that's really what we have here coming from the informant about Mr. Matthews.
But isn't part of your, I mean, how does your Franks argument, I guess, deal with that point, which is that your Franks argument is that what he omitted is that the source had not been to the apartment for at least 6+ months. So if the affidavit suggests current knowledge, but he in fact omitted that the source told him something differently, then doesn't that get you to your Franks issue?
I think it does, and that is what the lawyer that filed the motion tried to bring to the court's attention. The court denied the motion. Apparently before the lawyer filed, he indicated that there were documents to show that, and I agree that they were not filed with the court. They're not
where,
in the record.
Where did he indicate that there's documents to show that? The only documents that I see mentioned in suppression papers of the defendant is a proffer to provide the evidence from Superior Court.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. The lawyer indicated that there were documents he was going to provide. The record is...
Right, but those documents were about whether or not the CI was a drug addict, et cetera.
Well, it's
there
my
understanding... Excuse me, just one second. Maybe I just want to get my whole question out so I'm sure I get the right answer, which is, where did he proffer evidence that the CI had not been in the apartment in 6 months?
I believe he proffered that in his original motion.
I have the motion.
Of course, I'm looking.
I thought I saw it in this, at the status hearing where they were discussing timing for a hearing.
It may have been in his discussion of what he planned to present at the hearing. But I'm looking at the motion to suppress at Joint Appendix page 25. It's bullet point 3 from the top of the page. The source had not participated in nor witnessed any illegal drug transaction in the subject premises during the previous 6+ months.
Right, but he didn't. That's only a list of the things that it's claimed that the officer didn't disclose.
Correct.
And both Franks and our cases insist on evidence, preliminary evidence, that this is actually correct
in
the form of an affidavit.
Yes.
So, for example, the defendant could have said, I will testify at the hearing, or I have a friend who will testify that he knows this person, he was in California during those 6 months. There's nothing like that in this case.
I agree, and that's why I raised in my motion that even if the court wants to consider a finding under Leon, I think there needs to be a further record made below.
No, but what I'm saying is Frank's and our cases require that before you get to a Franks hearing, you have to have this affidavit.
I agree. I'm talking about, I think there's two different issues in the motion. One is just basically that it's a bare bones affidavit, and mm-hmm. It's stale, it's unreliable, and that basically it doesn't meet the Leon exception. The second issue raised in the motion is the Franks issue.
Right.
I think what I'm proposed, particularly in my reply brief, is that if the court that the court below didn't make findings of how this would meet the Leon exception, particularly given the allegations that the court was told you're going to get documents about, and before the court got the documents, denied the motion. And that's the record before this court.
So I think there are two issues. One is your Leon issue, which would require on the face of the officer's affidavit that no reasonable magistrate could have found probable cause. Right? That's one.
Right.
A second is if you have, and this is all discussed in Leon, and the second is if you have evidence that the officer willfully or recklessly left out information that was required, then you get to a Franks hearing in which you can put that evidence on. As to the latter, I don't see the evidence. That is, so far, I don't see that you've presented any evidence. Frank says specifically that it has to be a preliminary showing because it can't be for the purpose of for a discovery. You agree there wasn't the preliminary showing.
I agree with the court that what the lawyer raised in the papers, he did not present.
Not enough for Frank.
But there was a status hearing that discussed this, and that's at Joint Appendix 44 and 45.
Yes.
And the lawyer said, I have an affidavit. I didn't know how to file it. I can give it to the court.
Well, I think that's the affidavit for the actual search warrant. So when the lawyer actually filed the motion to suppress, he had not attached the affidavit for the search warrant. So
okay.
I believe at the status hearing, he's giving the court
okay. Just
the affidavit.
And then he says he has two witnesses he would call at the hearing.
Right.
Mr. Matthews and somebody else in the court, you know, says, well, we'll have a hearing later.
Right. And then before the scheduled hearing, the court denied the motion. So, I mean, I agree that the attorney said I have records, said I have witnesses. It was scheduled for a hearing, and the court denied it without And I think the attorney relied on the court saying we're going to have a hearing. And no one said, you know, we're not going to have a hearing until all of a sudden the court denied the motion. And I think my understanding from the record is that that would go to both of the issues presented in the motion to suppress, which is why I'm saying that as a fallback position that I would ask this court to remand the case to be able to present that and complete the record. At this point, I would like to reserve the rest of my time to respond to the government's argument.
May it please the court, my name is L. Jackson Thomas, and I represent the United States in this appeal. Let me start with the suggestion that there was some sort of procedural unfairness because the court summarily denied the Frank's motion without a hearing. The fact of the matter was there was a status hearing, as you indicated, Judge Wilkins, and between that and the date of the denial of the motion, frankly, there was no filing of any affidavit. In this case, it had been on the docket for some time. How to file an affidavit with the court seems not to be some huge...
Well, the lawyer said that, you know, what we're talking about here is a confidential source. And an affidavit about why the confidential source didn't know what he said that he knew or didn't tell the police officer what the police officer suggests. He didn't want to out this confidential source, and so he wasn't sure about how to file the affidavit, is what he said at the status hearing.
But affidavits are regularly filed, or documents are regularly filed under seal. And there's no secret about how to file documents under seal. These documents were not filed during the pendency of this case in the district court.
But Judge Walton didn't rely on that in his ruling. He said, I'm going to assume, for the sake of argument, that this proffer is sufficient, basically, in that that the omission of at least the time and date information that is proffered would defeat probable cause. I'm going to nonetheless find that the requisite scienter hasn't been alleged or shown to justify a Frank's hearing. Wasn't that the basis of his ruling?
Well, I didn't read Judge Walton's ruling that way. I read Judge Walton as saying, even if this warrant were somehow defective, that would not warrant suppression of the evidence under Leon. And you've not made a sufficient showing under Frank's for two reasons. One, some of the evidence that you proffered has been set forth in the warrant. For instance, you claim that he's working off the beef and the affidavit sets forth. The affiants believe that the source is trying to get favorable treatment from the government. I don't read Judge Walton as having said, well, I accept for purposes of deciding the motion that the source had not been to the defendant's home in 6 months.
He said, finally, even assuming arguendo, this is at JA 60, that the omission of the fact that the source had neither witnessed nor participated in drug transactions for 6+ months prior to providing information to Officer Fanone, another fact that the government claims is false, even assuming that would give rise to stale information, the defendant has failed to make any offer of proof that Fanone omitted this information in a deliberate attempt to mislead the judge who issued the warrant. And then he cites cases about, you know, what you have to show to basically meet that intent standard of Frank's. So for that part of the ruling, with respect to the omission of when the source told Fanone that he had been in the apartment, he said that I'll accept, for the sake of argument, that would defeat probable cause if he had included that omitted information but you don't meet the recklessness standard.
Right. Well, I had forgotten that part of the record. I apologize. But, again, the defect, as Judge Walton points out in the passage you've just recited, is that you haven't shown that this was intentionally or recklessly left out of the warrant, assuming that is true. And that is an obligation under Frank.
Well, that be the purpose of the Frank hearing rather than part of the showing to get the Frank hearing.
Well,
I mean, it would not seem to be the norm that if you're entitled to the Frank hearing, you already have direct evidence that it's recklessly or willfully left out. You know it's left out, and therefore you request the hearing.
But you must at least allege that it was willfully, intentionally, or recklessly left out. And that allegation was never set forth.
The Supreme Court said back in the 1930s in the Scrow case, and our circuit and other circuits have said it in numerous times since, that when you got a search warrant, especially of a home, you've got to show that there's probable cause at the time that the warrant is being issued. So time is a critical element. Time is as critical to the probable cause determination as evidence that the contraband is actually there. Doesn't matter if it was there a year or 10 years or 100 years ago. There needs to be probable cause that it's there now.
Well,
so why isn't the omission of something that's critical to the determination of probable cause, why isn't that as a matter of law enough to raise the question that there's a reckless disregard for the truth?
Well, if that has been omitted, then fine. But we're also arguing that in this affidavit, as Judge Sintel points out, there is evidence that the affiant's knowledge about the defendant's criminality is current.
Okay, so let's say that's the way to read the affidavit.
Right.
That Fanon is actually conveying that he was told by the source that he saw this recently. Okay, if the offer of proof is that's a lie and that the source didn't tell him that the source actually told him that he hadn't been there for 6 months or a year prior, then don't we have a Franks problem?
If the source said to Fanon that he hadn't been there for 6 months and Fanon failed to disclose that, then we would have a Franks problem.
Then why shouldn't we have had a hearing here then, since that was the offer of proof?
Well, but that's not the offer of proof. I mean, that is, there is no offer of proof in that regard. There is only the bold accusation that happened, and that's not even averred in the motion. I understand what Judge Walton assumed for purposes of resolving the issue, all right? But I'm not sure that...
When the motion says the source hadn't been to the apartment in 6+ months and couldn't have observed anything, what are we to infer from that as an offer of proof?
But even if, as Judge Walton did, we assume that the source had not been there for 6 months, what the source is reporting is an ongoing 3-year-long trafficking scheme, wholesale trafficking scheme, which, if we don't focus on whether or not the drugs are present, but rather focus on whether or not the accoutrements of that business are there, computer records, paper records, money, paraphernalia, what have you, this court's decision of Berners suggests that those items may exist even after 6 months. And the indication, and so there would not, and this warrant certainly seeks to secure those, to seize those items too. So even if you assume...
So even if we assume that the source told Fanon, I haven't been to the apartment in over a year.
Right. Then
there'd still be probable cause to go search for computer records a year after the last known drug transaction?
This court in Berner suggests that very thing. This court in Berner said that part of the staleness consideration has to do with the nature of the items that are being seized. Now, whether they are fungible, whether they are perishable, or whether they are, have some longevity. If you're looking for the records and computer records and what have you, and this warrant certainly sets forth the importance of those items to the possessor, to the alleged possessor, and their importance to the drug trafficking scheme, then those records, as this court has said in Berner and other cases, are likely to still exist. So the absence of the affiant, of the source from the defendant's apartment for 6 months may be relevant to whether or not the police are going to find drugs, but is less relevant to the question of whether or not they're going to find the accoutrements of the trafficking act. And so that obviates the need for the Franks here.
Can I just seems to me you're going on a path here that's unnecessary. The under Franks and under two of our opinions, Maynard and Richardson, you don't get a Franks hearing unless you have an affidavit indicating not only that something in the affidavit of the officer is untrue, but that is willfully or recklessly untrue. That's what they all say. The most we have here, the papers, the motion papers of the defendant in this case, do not suggest presentation of any evidence other than a claim that for 6 months there had been no observance, correct?
Correct.
The only other statement there is a proffer of the defendant as a witness at a hearing about a month before the judge's decision, correct?
Correct.
There's no proffer in that statement of what the witness will say.
Right.
We have no idea what the witness will say.
Right.
There was at least a month between that hearing and the judge's decision. Is that right?
Right.
The judge at the hearing didn't say, I won't hear from you, did he?
No.
So we now come to the judge's decision, and there's still no affidavit by any witness that anything in the document is false, correct?
Right.
Isn't that the end of the matter with respect to Franks? Why are we on this long additional set of questions about, well, what if we excise this information, et cetera? Seems to me if you excise all the information, government loses because then it has nothing. The question is whether there was a right to a Franks hearing in the first place, and without an affidavit from a witness, where is the grounds for a Franks hearing?
There is none, and that's what I tried to allude to, Judge Garland, when I said that between the status hearing and the dismissal, there had been this lull during which nothing was filed. There was no filing of an affidavit.
But didn't the judge say we're going to have a hearing?
The judge did say we're going to have a hearing.
And doesn't that imply then at the hearing you'll be able to present your witnesses?
It implies that you'll be able to supply witnesses, but it doesn't obviate the need for you to conform with the procedural requirements for a Franks hearing, and that is, as Judge Garland has pointed out, that you file a proffer, and no proffer was filed. In fact, no allegation was made and in addition, no allegation was made that the officers knew anything about this. Now, I understand that Judge Walton ultimately decided that he would, for purposes of resolving the issue, make some assumptions. But the procedural requirements are still in play.
The government certainly never filed a proffer as to when the source told Officer Fanone he had been in the apartment and had observed drugs in response to the Franks motion, right?
Judge Wilkins, let me answer that by saying, in the absence of a proffer from the defendant asserting that the affiant hadn't been there within 6 months, there was no need for the government to file a counter-proffer. In fact, it would not occur to the government in the absence of...
The motion said this guy hasn't been to the apartment in 6+ months. The government responds to it in a footnote and says that's not true, but kind of deafening in its omission is any kind of an allegation of why that's not true and what the date was.
Well, and I think that the reason for that silence is because from the government's perspective, we're not able to supplement the affidavit.
Is that the reason, or isn't the reason, that Franks expressly holds the purpose is not discovery or to provide an opportunity for the defendant to cross-examine the government? Government can stand mute. Maybe this law is all wrong, but it is the Supreme Court's law, and it is the law of our cases, that the government can stand mute until there is a preliminary showing by affidavit that there's something incorrect in the affidavit of the government. And until then, government doesn't have to say anything. The burdens of production are shifted at this point.
Let me again say that that's the point I was trying to make when I said that until there's no need for the government to file a proper in the absence of a proper from the defendant. There's nothing for us to respond to, and the reason for the silence in our opposition to the motion is that the government's position is that we have no need to supplement and probably think that we're unable to supplement the affidavit until there is some proffer from the defendant.
The defense counsel in this case is Mr. Briley, correct?
Right.
He's been a lawyer and a defender in this court for at least 25, maybe 30 years, right? The argument that he...
I've known Mr. Briley during the 30 years of my practice, yeah.
The argument that he doesn't know how to file an affidavit seems unlikely under those circumstances.
I think, again, Judge Garland, that was my point when I said it's not... There's no secret about how you file an affidavit or how you file that affidavit under seal. I mean, it's not some difficult, arduous task. And certainly in the time that was allotted between the status hearing and the order dismissing the motion, there was an ample opportunity to find out how to file. So, I mean, that seems... That is not a reason for this proffer not to have been made and for a defendant not to have complied with the Franks requirement.
Okay. Further questions? Okay, we'll hear from
the
court. Does the defendant have time? Great.
Well, what I would first point the court to, in addition to, I think, relying on the fact that Judge Walton had scheduled the matter for a hearing, at the very end of the hearing, Mr. Briley says, and this is at the joint appendix at 50, can I tender these now or wait until the hearing? They're not marked exhibits. I think we should wait. And the court says, I think the better way would be to either wait and use them during the hearing, or you could submit them as a filing. I think the attorney is relying on Judge Walton.
Where are we in the record?
Joint appendix, page 50 and 51. And it's the transcript of the status hearing that Judge Wilkins was referring to. So I think not only is the matter scheduled for a hearing, for whatever reason, and this is the same hearing where at the beginning, Mr. Briley on Joint Appendix 44, the reason apparently that he can't attach the affidavit is because of my lack of technological skills, whatever that means. So
that may well be right.
It may be an ECF filing problem, but I think... Regardless, Judge Walton has scheduled the matter for a hearing, the attorney's relying on that and relying on the court saying, I think the better way would be to either wait and use them during the hearing or you could submit them.
Let's see what them is. If you look back up the page,
right.
Briley says, I have certified copies of records from the Superior Court regarding the person who lived to the bottom line.
Right. And I believe
isn't
what
that
Mr.
what the pronoun is referring back to rather than
I believe so. And all of the search warrants related to this investigation and he's raising issues that are raised in other affidavits. This was a Superior Court search warrant. And there were filings in Superior Court related to the other search warrants and related to the proceedings against the informant. And so that's what he's talking about. And I think he is trying to, he doesn't refer to the name of the individual. I think he is actually trying to uphold the privacy of the informant.
What is there that lets us know that this would be a proper with respect to the 6 month time lapse?
I'm sorry?
What is there that makes us aware in the record or makes Judge Walton aware that this is a proper of something that would establish the 6 or evidence the 6-month timeline.
Well, what I'm saying, I'm not saying that all those records are solely. Mr. Briley's clearly saying, I'm going to put on witnesses as well. I think all of this evidence together is what Mr. Briley is pointing to. That
the witnesses would come at the hearing.
Yes.
And what we're dealing with now is whether there was an entitlement to a hearing.
Well, I understand that, but I'm saying when the judge has basically scheduled the case for a hearing, and I think and basically the attorney's relying on that and in scheduling the hearing and in the presentation of the evidence. The judge doesn't say, well, before we have a hearing, I need to hear your evidence. The judge says, we're going to schedule it for a hearing. And then in denying the motion, he's basically assuming what you're saying is true. I'm finding that there's not a reckless disregard. And I think the court has to reverse that finding. I think for the reasons that you are asking about how the sentence is constructed that the police officer is saying about the 3 years, if that's not true and the officer knows that he hasn't been there for over 6 months, he's clearly lying to the magistrate judge. And the reason why that's so important is because staleness, it would also go to basically, I think, deluding the magistrate judge into thinking that this person has an ongoing and current relationship with Mr. Matthews and that home. So I think for all of these reasons, this court must reverse the decision of Judge Walton.
Other questions? I think we'll take the case under submission. You were appointed to represent the counsel by the defendant by the court. We're very grateful for your assistance.
Thank you.